He looks determined without being ruthless. Something heroic in his manner. There's a courage about him. Doesn't look like a killer. Comes across so calm. Acts like he has a dream. Full of passion.
You don't trust me, huh?
Well, you know why.
I do. We're not supposed to trust anyone in our profession anyway.
Peace, 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 and welcome to The Rematch, which is part of the BasketballNews.com podcast network. On The Rematch, you'll hear in-depth interviews with notable names from all walks of life. Because sometimes the media just doesn't get it right. The Rematch is that second opportunity to clarify, put things in proper context, correct fake news or misreported controversy. The media still exists as the most powerful entity on earth because they control the minds of the masses. I'm Matan Thomas, and the full truth is what we are aiming to catch. Many media stories omit details that would dilute their clickbait roar, and that's why there's a need for the rematch. Today I sat down with Coach Kenny Blakeney, head coach of the Howard University basketball team. We discussed him being the MEAC Coach of the Year, Howard being the winner of the MEAC Tournament, which is the first outright MEAC championship since 1987, the first back-to-back winning season for Howard since 1985, the second most wins in the history of the program since turning D1 in 1981, what it means for Howard to sign to Brand Jordan, how he cares about his players' growth, not only on the court, but off the court as well, the history and legacy of Howard University, and much more. This was a great discussion. Hope you enjoy. Coach Kenny Blakeney, head coach of Howard University. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, my man. So good to be back on your show.
I really appreciate it. Great year this year. We were following you the whole year. So let me read a few of the accomplishments and accolades because you have so many. You got the MEAC Coach of the Year. Howard was the winner of the MEAC Tournament, the first outright MEAC Championship since 1987. Then it was the first back-to-back winning seasons for Howard University since 1985. And the second most wins in the history of the program since turning D1 in 1981. And you signed to Brand Jordan on top of everything else. So that's a major list of accomplishments in your short tenure at Howard. So let's go through them one by one. Let's start off with MEAC Coach of the Year. A tremendous honor. And you did such a great job coaching. Talk to me about winning that award.
Well, I think that award is more a team award than anything else. And, you know, I talk about, Etan, that I've been very lucky and very fortunate to have some incredible mentors along the way, from my boys club coach with Buddy Burkett, Pete Pinnell, Rick Davis, to my rec coach at Rabot Junior High with Fluff Parker, to my high school coach, Coach Morgan Wooten, Neil Murphy, Pat Smith, and then my college coach, Coach Mike Krzyzewski. And from that tree comes Tommy Amaker, David Henderson, and Mike Bray. Coach Lefty Durzel gave me my first start into the business. Had a great conversation with him maybe about 3 or 4 days ago, which was really neat. Mm-hmm. And Chuck Durzel, who was actually on staff at the time, who's now currently the head coach at Murray, was a guy very instrumental in having Coach Drizel hire me. So it's just been a path that I've been very fortunate and lucky to be on. And I talk about all the time, like I can't monetarily pay those guys back. Mm. But I hope that I can make them proud of the work that I'm doing as a teacher, as an educator, and as a leader of young men and women at Howard University. So it's a collective award. I'm very grateful for our staff. And very grateful for the young men that allowed me to coach them this year.
You know, you were very emotional after the MEAC Tournament Championship win. Again, it was the first outright MEAC Championship since 1987. Talk to me about what that moment in particular meant to you.
Yeah, I think it was a culmination of a lot of things, to be honest with you. I'm a guy that has been pretty much I've had to do a lot of stuff on my own. I haven't had, somebody that has handed me something and say, hey, go, this is yours. And I've had to earn everything. Mm-hmm. And along the path, I've had a lot of people that haven't believed in me. People think that just because you're from Duke and you're from DeMatha, that you're kind of automatically geared for, success, or they're going to put you in this box. I've had to fight, scratch, and claw my whole life to get to this point right here. And I joke with, people all the time, I hear the detractors. I hear everything. And that fuels me because I I'm just competitive the way I'm wired in my DNA. And I love that. I was telling my wife today, I said, I've been getting knocked ever since I was been in the eighth, 8 years old. As a player and a person in my neighborhood, I've been hearing the distraction ever since then. So it's something that doesn't bother me, but it's something that fuels me. And I think, when all the emotion came out, a lot of it was that. But also, we have a group of guys on our team that have very similar stories to me and paths to me. We have a group of guys that nobody believed in, from our staff, with, each and every one of our guys on our staff to our players. We have players that didn't have scholarship offers before I offered them scholarships. We had players that were looking at prep school options. So collectively, I think it was something that, we all embodied and were on the same page as brothers, walking together step by step and accomplishing something that no one thought that we could accomplish and doing it with a group that nobody ever really believed in. That was a result of all the emotion.
It definitely makes sense. And you guys playing so hard, and that MEAC tournament was so fun to watch. And again, just to reiterate, this was the first back-to-back winning seasons for Howard since 1985, and the second most winning season for the program since turning D1. So you are really building something special at Howard. Talk about that. We're going to get to everything off the floor, but let's focus right now just on the floor of everything that you're building and what you have been able to accomplish.
Yeah. And thank you for asking. I think, when you look at our record and you kind of look at my tenure, it's been a tale of two tables. Our first year, I think we were 4-28 or 29. And it was a year that we kind of had to blow the program up. You talk about not having a winning tradition and kind of like not having, we had three winning seasons, I think, since 1992, 2002, and then last year, 2022. Now you couple that with 2023, four winning seasons in the last 30 years. You talk about not having back-to-back winning seasons since, 86, 87. So the program was established as a Division I program in 81. So since 81, the record for most wins in a season is 24. Our team this year was at 22, and that's the second most wins in school history. So going through what we had to go through our first year, being 4-28 or 29, I knew that it was going to be a process. We had to get buy-in. And we didn't get that immediate buy-in from our first group. So we had to sacrifice a year of what record-wise it ended up being for the integrity and the culture of the program. And I was okay with that. I don't think other people were okay with that, but they didn't understand what, ultimately the results could be from taking a stand and saying, okay, we're going to do it the right way. I don't want guys on my team smoking weed. I don't want guys on my team that are taking days off. I don't want guys on my team that are treating people the wrong way. We have to play a certain way. We have to play, you know, very fundamentally sound. Like all of the things that as a parent, you would probably try to instill into your kid for your young man to have the right priorities and virtues and morals was the same thing that I was trying to instill in our basketball program. And in doing that, you know, a lot of our guys didn't want to buy in because previously they didn't have to make those sacrifices and commitments. Previously they were okay with, you know, missing practice because, you know, maybe they had a tattoo and the tattoo wasn't completely healed or dried yet, or whatever those things, not lifting weights for the whole month of December. You know, that was kind of the culture and the behavior of our program. And I was just like, that's unacceptable. So I sacrificed that year to try to develop integrity in our program, but also culture for our young men to be able to build a sustainable foundation. And we had to play walk-ons that never played before. We started two guys that were walk-ons that probably hadn't played 50 minutes their whole college career and other guys that weren't substantial parts of the program, but they were buying into what we believed in. They ultimately believed in the vision that we had for the program. And that meant a lot to me. And I'm still very close and in touch with those guys because they really helped me establish, I think, you know, building blocks for going into year two. Going into year two, we get McCore Maker, the first five-star to ever be, you know, committed to an HBCU university. And along with that came a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, it was, you know, during COVID, we had also a number of young men that were talented. But I think, you know, if we would have had a chance to play out the full season, we stopped playing right around January the 15th or 16th. We shut down the season because we had 13 guys contract COVID over a period of January 1 through January, probably like 4 or 5. Wow. And when we tried to crank it back up around January 13th or 14th, once everybody kind of started to get cleared, I wasn't happy with, what I was seeing in terms of the recovery from our young men with COVID. They had some lingering COVID effects. Their breathing wasn't where I thought it should be. We didn't have all the information. And instead of maybe having something that could have possibly ended in a way that we all would have regretted, I thought it was best for us to kind of shut down the season. In doing that, we never had an opportunity to kind of see what could have happened to our team with having a core maker and having our guys go through a full season at that point. So, you know, that was a little bit of an incomplete picture for us and almost like a restart that we had to do from that moment to year three. Year three, we brought in some really great guys that I had previously worked with at Columbia University. With Randall Brumont and Ty Bibbs. They're both playing professionally right now in Europe and doing well. I thought that those guys were great for our program because we had a young group that hadn't played a lot of basketball because of COVID and because of their situation, which I explained before, not being highly recruited kids or recruited kids in general. Some of those kids really didn't even play in high school. So having a chance to kind of hit the reset button with some captains and some leaders and some mature men that have gone through the rigors of Ivy League basketball and to help grow our program, but also help our young men take another step in their maturity was really important. And I think that was kind of like another, you know, putting the mortar in the bricks for our foundation that we kind of laid in year one down. And having the first winning season in, you know, 20 years at Howard University. But I really attributed to those young men that we brought in with Ty Bibbs and Randall Brumont, helping the younger kids kind of like take some steps forward and allowing those guys to be great, but also being mentors to those guys as well.
So it seems like you kind of had to come in almost like Coach Carter, you know, maybe not exactly, but, you know, you had to just change a lot of things around and a lot of the culture that was there. And you had to really get the buy-in from the players, but you really changed the entire culture of the program, right?
No, completely. There was a reason why Howard University had not had success in basketball. And it was just identifying what that was and trying to get rid of it. And, you know, it took some heavy lifting. You know, our second group, we were so talented. Mm-hmm. But being so talented and having a team that was previously 4-28 or 4-29, you know, we had guys that just thought that they could do anything on our team because they're like, well, we're better than those guys that were there. So you guys are sorry. We're here to kind of be your savior. Allow us to do whatever we think we should be doing. And that was a little bit of an adjustment, right? To get us everybody on the same page. And, you know, that struggle was real and that struggle was a fight. But that's just part of building a program, right? Mm-hmm. You have to go through those rough spots to get to the other side. Right. Yeah, it's complete blow up of the program.
But it definitely is going in the right direction now. Now, so after you all won the MEAC tournament, you had a tough first draw with Kansas. That was a tough first draw. But tell me what your takeaway from that experience was. And also, two-part question, talk about the fact that Vice President Kamala Harris came into the locker room afterwards and was really complimentary of the team's effort and the culture and how proud of, you know, that Howard alumni were and everything like that. So talk about both of those aspects, what you learned from that experience and, you know, everything that Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris said to you after the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at that experience, we had our exit interviews yesterday with all of our guys and just talking to them about the experience. It was great. You know, certainly we didn't get the result that we wanted to get. Mm-hmm. But I think for all of our guys to have a chance to participate in the NCAA tournament, to have a chance to compete against Kansas on that stage, now understand the things that we need to do to win games in the NCAA tournament, how we must approach it with a different mindset. We must work with a different mindset. We must work with a different intensity. I think makes all the difference in the world with, you know, what we do here in the spring and what we do here in the summer. I think personally for me, it's I understand that I need to coach with a sense of urgency.
Okay.
During that period. You know, it's a one game deal. And, you know, for us to, I think, be always in that alertness and intense mindset that, you know, it is a one game shot and we are playing single one game championships with each moment that we have in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. I think I can do a better job with probably letting that be our message as we move forward. You know, to answer your second question about Vice President Harris, what a wonderful ambassador she's been for not only our country, but for our university. Mm-hmm. We've had the, you know, the luck and the fortune to be around her in a number of different capacities over the last probably 6 to 8 months as a basketball program. Mm-hmm. We were invited by her office to participate in the 50th anniversary of Title IX that took place at American University that she was part of, and so gracious and so nice to come over and spend some time with our basketball team. As we did a clinic for young girls in the community here in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. The second event that we did with her, she had a little symposium where she brought in about 75 people, and there was about 4 or 5 different topics that she wanted to kind of talk through with all men to try to get the pulse of what we're thinking as, you know, people in the community, people who are in lanes that are potential that have potential information that can help her make better decisions on things moving forward as the vice president. And we were there to amplify and lend our voice to Black maternal health, which is very important to her and her office and also President Biden. And then, you know, lastly, she was in Des Moines for, I think, an event on reproduction, which, you know, certainly lends in that lane of maternal health, and came over to our basketball game and was extremely complimentary to our program. She extended an invitation to the White House and, you know, made it clear that she and other Bison have been following us all year and how proud she was on how we carried ourselves on and off the court. So what a gracious vice president and alum of Howard University and ambassador that she's been. We're just honored that she recognized us and has been following our program and our team and things that we've done on and off the court.
You know, I've heard you discuss multiple times when talking about Howard University and talking about the basketball team and your relation to the players, that you reemphasize to them or reiterate to them that they are standing on the shoulders of giants. And you say that phrase a lot and you talk about the history of Howard. Talk to me a little bit about that history and those shoulders that you're referring to when you talk to your players.
Yeah, when you think about Howard University, you think about the legacy of our alums, right? So you talk about Thurgood Marshall, talk about Stokely Carmichael, you talk about, you know, Gregory Meeks, you know, Vice President Harris, Chadwick Boseman, David Dinkins, Governor Wilder, you know, Marianne Shad Carey, who was the first Black woman to ever vote in a major election. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go down the line of alums that have done some historic, mind-blowing things. And one of the lines I really love to say is, what would our world be without Howard University? Like, the contribution of the students that have attended Howard and the footprints that they've had on our society and our culture is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And I want our players to understand that legacy. And I want our players to understand the history, the sacrifice, the commitment that our ancestors made in order for them to be able to, you know, do the things that they're able to do freely at Howard and with the resources and all the different things that they have at Howard. Some people may think that, you know, we don't have the same things that, you know, other universities have. But think about how our ancestors had it in 1867 when the school was founded. They were just happy to have a chance to, you know, be able to have equal opportunities with education as other students and other people that were going to PWIs. So, you know, I don't want them to lose sight on our history or our legacy and the sacrifice and the commitment that those that became before them laid for us to be able to do the things that we're doing at Howard University.
And in addition to that, you know, y'all are sponsored by Brand Jordan now. Yeah. And so there are a lot of upgrades being made. So talk to me about that as well. Yep, I see the Jordan brand on your sweatshirt right there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful partnership. And when the partnership was made, you know, Brand Jordan wanted to have this relationship with us first and foremost because we stand on the shoulders of giants. And when you look at it, our culture is unmatched with any culture in the country. And they understood that, you know, with, I think, the movers and shakers that Howard has produced, the brand, which is globally recognized for Blackness and Black excellence, that the, you know, having that partnership would be a perfect match. But also, you know, their plan is for us to be the first HBCU that can compete with Power Fives on the basketball court.
Right.
You know, and that's really important for them. When the deal was made, I got a call from one of their higher ups and said, don't forget what we're doing now. Like, this is really important, not only for, you know, for Jumpman, but for the total movement of HBCUs and Black excellence in athletics. Like, let's do this and go forward. So they've been great. The relationship has been great. You know, it's mind blowing for us to have the, you know, from our past relationship until now, where our guys are, you know, getting 15 pair of shoes a year, or, you know, unlimited kind of swag that they get, you know, the pride that they walk around with, you know, having the jump man on the court, having a new court, you know, we have the infrastructure being built right now. We're getting a new practice facility that should be done at the end of the summer. We're getting new locker rooms. We're getting new offices. We've made some enhancements with our facility, Burr Gymnasium. So it makes our players feel like they're not compromising anything by choosing Howard. Now, with all the other added things that we can do with, you know, things that take place with our university as for their student experience.
And that's so important, because you do hear that a lot, is the question of what are the facilities, you know, what are they going to be taking a step down? Are they going to be in a basement somewhere with no, you know what I mean? That's just the thought. But I think it's great for you, you know, to be able to show that image of excellence, for not only, you know, the history of Howard standing on the shoulders of giants, but not also for his technology and facilities and infrastructure and gear and everything like that to be right on par as well. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about off the court. If I could quote you, I follow you. So I've been watching, because I even when I interviewed you, I guess that was a couple of years ago, it's always about the interaction with the players and the values that you instill in players outside of basketball. You know what I mean? Because you talk about the court and everything that you handle and inspire for, and you've been achieving, and you won the MEAC tournament, and you know, all these different things, you're going to keep on building on that. But now it's something that's rare, because you actually care about the young men's character, about them building and preparing themselves for the future, you know, not just what they can provide for you in terms of wins and losses on the court for the time period that they're there. And that is a difference. So I'm going to read this quote. You said, "Our basketball court at Howard University is a classroom, and I look at myself as an educator and a teacher first and foremost. And if I'm not giving our student athletes an experience that is broader than just Georgia Avenue, and teaching them things that they can take with them for the rest of their lives, then I'm doing a disservice to them as student athletes." And I think that's such a very powerful quote. Go into a little bit more depth with that for me, if you could.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, there's one of the guys I really admire and respect is a baseball coach at Vanderbilt. His name is Tim Corbin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been very influential to some of the things that we do as a program. The reason I got connected with him is because I wanted to find parallels of our program, where we started and where they started, and the success that they had and how they got there. Vanderbilt baseball, which has become one of the, you know, I mean, they're the cream of the crop, you know, with higher education in baseball. Mm-hmm. Started a lot like Howard University in terms of resources, no tradition, no history, no success. And Coach Corbin just has slightly, you know, built that thing piece by piece, and, you know, has had his hands on everything, you know, Vandy baseball. And so I reached out to him and said, "Hey, can I have a conversation?" And, you know, this conversation was recent, but I'll backtrack to a little bit of that.
Okay.
And one of the things he said to me, he goes, "You know, in order to build great programs, you got to build great men." Mm. And that just is something that has stuck with me and resonated with me, because I couldn't articulate that, but that's been my passion and my reason for wanting to be at Howard University. Can we take everything about Howard, our history, our tradition? We, you know, when Howard men see other Howard men, they talk about being a Howard man, mm-hmm. and how important and how proud they are of that. Can we take all that and now put that and utilize it on the basketball end to help grow and develop future leaders of our country and becoming, you know, what the phrase I love to say is global citizens. Having a chance for our young men to be part of, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, having our men, young men, go to the White House to be part of panels with the vice president, having them get invited to the 50th anniversary of, you know, the Title IX in being part of, you know, in the company and in from the White House, like of the vice, like, you know, being included with conversations with Alma Adams and, you know, all the different people that we've touched. We have young men in our programs been featured on CNN this year, on the New York Times and Time Magazine. Like, I want it to be transformative where we're not just, you know, mentioned and talked about through sports media outlets, but we're also part of the news cycle as well. So to take, you know, our group and really look at it, we have moments before every practice where we have a classroom session, and that classroom session may happen in our film area or it may happen on the basketball court, where we talk about, you know, maybe poems or quotes or, you know, different situations that may be going on in our world, and we discuss it. And I want them to really try to process it and articulate maybe, you know, how they view it, how they see it, and how that can parallel to maybe something that's going on in our program or where we are at that moment in our program. And it's something I spend a lot of time at. It may take me 45 minutes to find the right quote at nighttime to just, you know, spend that time with our team and talk about, you know, how does this quote, you know, touch our team at this moment where we are and what we're doing. So if I can have our team exposed to things that are much larger than themselves, much larger than what we talk about outside of the Howard University walls of Georgia Avenue, mm-hmm. I really feel like, you know, internships with on Wall Street, internships on Capitol Hill, where Elijah Hawkins, you know, the guy that I'm pretty sure you know well, mm-hmm. the math grad, he was a 3.75 student last semester.
Wow.
You know, and intern on Capitol Hill and was, you know, part of the January 6th hearings. Like, are you kidding me? You know, to have those students have those kind of experiences where the communities that they've probably come from haven't exposed them to those type of thoughts. If we can do that, if we can expose them to books, if we can expose them to just thinking outside of the scope and the box that they've always been in, then we're winning as teachers, as mentors, as leaders, and creating, I think, future teachers, leaders, and mentors that can go out into their communities or, you know, in their household, be dads and loving husbands that can take that part of their family and continue to keep pushing the narrative forward for us as Black people to keep thriving and have success in the future.
I mean, I think it's so great that you do that. I remember when we first interacted, it was a few years ago, and I had a event up at Howard. It was a debate, Michael Eric Dyson and Bill Roden. And you wanted to bring your entire team there, but I think y'all were traveling. And that's where at first I was like, oh, you're going to bring the whole team there? He was like, yes, the whole team was going to be right there in the front because you wanted to expose them to different thoughts, different ideas, the art of debating, being able to, you know, articulate your points and things like that. And I was just really, really impressed by that. And then I was watching, there was a community service event. I actually reposted it, but it was a community service event that you did for Black mothers in D.C. where you were highlighting the issues with maternal health, specifically with Black women. And I'm watching this. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Talk about that event, if you could, for a little bit, because that's not something that you typically see on, you know, universities and colleges do with their basketball team. You know what I mean? So talk about that event in particular.
No, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. It's been important. And being at Howard, you know, Howard was created on social justice initiatives, right? It was created on social justice. It was created because Black students did not have an opportunity to get the education of other races or white racists at the time. Right. You know, we talk about, Stokely Carmichael. We talk about, Kwame Ture, like all of these incredible thought leaders and revolutionary pioneers have graced the halls of Howard University. We would be doing an injustice if we did not follow up and follow through with what they started mm-hmm. and the idea of what the belief is of our university. We might can position that mission a little bit more in a way that it may sound right or sound, a little bit more politically correct, but to just hit it right in the face, that's what we do. Like, that's who we are as a university, and that's who we are as a basketball program. So every year I've come up with a social justice initiative for our team. And this year, our players chose Black Maternal Health, which absolutely scared the heebie-jeebies out of me. Because as a 51-year-old Black man, I wasn't versed in this area. Mm. And I knew that as soon as I heard it, we were opening up a can of worms that if we didn't approach this and attack it the right way, this could come back to make us look really, really not good, especially mm-hmm. during the time that we had started it, which was right around the midterm elections. And, mm-hmm. You got Roe v. Wade, you got everything that was happening down in Georgia,
right.
With all of the, way that our world is going with, you're either down with this group or you're down with that group. And if right. you're not, we're coming after you. And it's very decisive.
Mm-hmm.
We had to really get into the lab and lock in on what Black maternal health is and to be able to understand it, but also articulate it in a way that, was smart. We represented ourselves well, we represented the university well, we represented our families the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And we represented this amazing cause that we were trying to amplify and lend our voice to. So we started off by going to the Congressional Black Caucus and getting familiar with it through a documentary that was produced by Allison Felix named Birthing Justice.
Okay.
And from there, we've researched and found Dr. Fatima Goss Graves, who is, unbelievably gracious with her time and her knowledge in this space. We did some work on it ourselves and had to take a deep dive. And all of this was taking place before we even announced what we were doing, because I didn't want us to step out there not prepared, because I knew that this was going to be such a topic that would ignite conversations that I wanted us to be ready. And in doing so, we teamed up with, Mama Toto's Village, which is located in Washington, D.C. over in mm-hmm. the Southeast, mm-hmm. that has an unbelievable center that, their success rate in the Black maternal health space is unparalleled with any other group an organization like that in the country.
Right.
That was great. And they allowed us to come over and do our day of service. And we've continued to partner with them on events. We have a Father's Day event that we're preparing for right now, where it's going to be a round table event and having conversations with dads and future dads about being parents, about being a dad and what that means and all the different things that go into parenting, but also the what Black maternal health may look like for a man, with the Black maternal health in this area. Black women are 3 to 4 times as high to have challenges or deaths around giving childbirth.
Mm.
So when your numbers are, when your numbers are that, like, what happens to the kid if the kid survives, hopefully, and then what's the dad's responsibility?
Right.
In this situation. So we're trying to continue to push the envelope with that. We heard from President Biden's office with the Department of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, who's the head of the Department of Health and Human Services. We're doing a event with him on Friday at 3:00, where we're working at the DC Diaper Bank. Firstly, we're going to have a roundtable discussion with him and his committee. And secondly, we're going to get to work and, prepare kits for maternal health and diapers for future moms. So we're still actively engaged in this space as well.
That's great. That's great. And I even saw that some of the players, during the tournament, they were wearing the T-shirts from there, talking about, there's a Black maternal health crisis in the U.S., all written on their T-shirts. So they were taking that message to the March Madness and NCAA tournament and telling how Black women deserve to survive childbirth. And I just thought that was so great to see, you know what I mean? Honestly, because it's bigger than basketball. And you're using the platform to be able to stand on an issue and stand together. So I think that was just amazing. So for you to be instilling this into these young men at this age and showing how they can do both simultaneously, they can both have success on the court and also use their positions as a platform, you know, the way that so many great athletes have done in the past, I just want to commend you on that because it's really something that's important for the maturation of our young men.
No, absolutely. And thank you for that. I really appreciate it. But the credit has to go to our young men because it's something they could have taken lightly. And we probably could have still figured out a way to make it look good. Mm-hmm. But they really jumped in with both feet and they dove deep down into this to understand what this was about, who it affects, and some of the things that we can do to have change in this space in the future, and are willing to communicate about it, you know, all the way up to the White House. So I really commend our players for, you know, being mature enough and understanding that this is a huge part of their student experience. You know, we're lucky that basketball is really important, but our students having great student experiences is the thing that I really want them to take from this when they leave. I want them to be as whole as they were when they come, or more whole as they were before they came. And these type of, I think, life lessons, life experiences, student experiences is part of their academic experience as well.
That's great. That's great. So last question, what is the goal moving forward for Howard University? I mean, of course, this year, you know, MEAC Coach of the Year for you, you know, you were the winner of the MEAC tournament. You know, first outright MEAC championship since 1987, back-to-back winning seasons. You played in the tournament. What are the next goals that you see for the program?
Yeah, we're lucky and fortunate that the group of young men that we have on a team have either 2 or 3 years of eligibility left after this year. We're going to graduate Kobe Dixon, the 6'9", 240-pound center that we have that was very instrumental in our season, not only on the court, but off the court, including his leadership. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, our whole team is going to be back. So why not try to take what we did this year and see if we can have, you know, the same kind of year. But if there's a chance to improve on that year, improve on it, you know, to take all the things that we talked about in terms of the infrastructure, the resources that are now starting to come in as part of having a team that was as visible as we were with all the things on and off the court, from, you know, T-shirt sales with the bookstore, or whatever those things are that contributing to more people being a part of. Now you have more students that are applying to Howard because of the visibility of the basketball program and the success of the basketball program. You have more sponsorship people that want to now connect with the program and be a part of it. You may have more TV games. So that's another revenue stream that comes in. And then you have donations that are being made not only to the university, but also to the athletic department and to the basketball program that can take our program to another level with resource-wise. So when you're looking at the success of programs, you know, all of those things certainly come into play. And I hope our basketball team can continue to be a vehicle for our university to increase in a number of those areas right there.
Well, that sounds great. Well, much success to you. So much respect to you, you know, for you both on and off the floor, everything that you're doing with the program. Like I said, on the floor and how you're developing the young man. So much respect to you. Definitely have my support. Thanks again for coming on the show today. And, you know, you deserve a chance to rest for a minute. You know what I mean? That's why I didn't even know. I was like, this is kind of quick to do an interview with you right after the tournament. But you deserve to rest for a minute. Then I'm sure you're getting right back to work. But no, thanks again for coming on the show, though, Coach.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I love what you do.
Thank you for listening to The Rematch.
You can find more episodes on basketballnews.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review. You can also find my articles on basketballnews.com, along with exclusive content from Kenyon Martin, James Posey, and more. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at AtonThomas36. Let me know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see as a guest. I would love your feedback.